What I want to do is to debate, or rather ask the panel their views on is management accounting ready for the future? That's Albemarle's statement, way of saying, does management accounting have a future? So it would be interesting to see. And then each of them are going to speak for the maximum of 5 minutes. Okay? And then we'll open this up to discussion, and we'll see where we go from there. Okay. So, it appears, being accountants, proper sort of people, we're going in order of the listing here. So, Helene.
Thank you, Michael. Well, so the question of is management accounting ready for the future? I was only asked to speak for 3 minutes, but that involves saying more than yes or no, I understand. If we were to say yes, then I think we'd be saying there's no room for improvement and there's no need for any further research, which is not what we feel. And if we said no, then obviously we have to say in what respect. But I think the answer, as normal, lies somewhere in between. I think that partly management accounting might be ready for the future, but we none of us know what the future is going to bring, so it's a difficult question to address. But I think in looking at what we've had presented today, in the first session, one measure is enough, obviously quite provocative, especially since most organisations are using multidimensional scorecards of some method or another, whether they're actually balanced scorecards, as in the Kaplan and Norton version or not. Concentrating on one measure may be appropriate. I'm sure it may be appropriate in a particular time, in a particular organisation. And particularly, the example that was given was an organisation that was in fairly desperate trouble and needed to focus on one big thing to improve performance. But it may be that having moved on that one big thing, then the next big thing might have been something somewhat different. Working in the higher education sector, as we do in universities, academics are all too aware of a multi-dimensional performance measurement tool that is the league tables for universities, which involves obviously an aggregation of measures in what most of us consider not very clever way, but nevertheless that's a feature of our environment. And therefore, in a university, if you're being measured on teaching quality and research quality, and do you actually ask people just to focus on one at the possible expense of the other? It may be that if you're very confident that you've got the gold standard on teaching, that you just focus on research. If you're very confident about your research, then it may be that you focus on teaching. But I think that there are a number of us that don't have a choice. We do have to work with multiple measures, even when they occasionally conflict. Also, looking at the presentation that we had on measurement from a management control perspective, and I have to say that one of my roles is as chair of the Management Control Association, when we think about management control systems, measurement is very much just a part of it. Some people in the room may be familiar with Simon's levers of control, for example, and measurement sort of fits the diagnostic levers, but the interactive levers, which involve the communications with people and the informal parts of management control systems, obviously have a big role to play. And I think in terms of the presentation, that first presentation, for me, the interesting area, which probably didn't get explored as well as it might have done, but we didn't have time, was this reducing decision rights and how that is used as a lever of control. But that's an interesting aspect for me. Moving on to the health sector, which I don't know as much about as Julia, so I'll probably leave Julia to comment more about that. Again, I find the similarities between the health sector and the higher education sector, because we both do rely on funding, and the funding we seem to find that the funding decreases year on year. You get penalties if you actually fail on performance measures, but you also get less money if the government think you can manage with less money or you're able to raise your money from other sources. So we do have to measure performance, we do have to improve performance in these sectors, but it doesn't necessarily lead to an increase in funding as it would obviously in the private sector. One of the interesting things for me from that presentation, though, was the Speaker's response to the question about using big data and in terms of is management accounting ready for the future. I think tying in with the presentation from Rick and his colleague from ICAW, I think that's an area where we do have to make a lot more progress to make sure that management accounting picks up the right bits of data and ignores the bits of data that would just be noise or superfluous to the main aims of management accounting. So how to harness those bits of big data that are useful, how to pick out what's useful in the data that's out there is going to be, I think, a continuing challenge for us. I think I'll leave other people to perhaps comment on things like blockchain. It's not an area that I know very much about, I have to confess, but I obviously know more about it now, having been enlightened about that, and I'm going away thinking about how something that could be applied to land registry might actually be applied to any management accounting problems. One thing I think I would just put on the table as being an area of management accounting that I don't think we're ready enough for the future is the area that I do research on, which is strategic investment decision making or resource allocation in organisations, looking at project appraisal. I think the tools and techniques that are used there are largely dated, and we haven't had the advances in that area that we have in other areas of management accounting. So I just flag that up as something which I think needs further work. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm going to talk a little, 3 minutes on management accounting ready for the future, but first I wanted to say how much I enjoyed the four papers. I'll talk a little bit more about the one performance measure, but I enjoyed the health and the multiple measures and how to put them together and tie them to one particular output. And in technology, I thought about how the technology, from David and Rick, I thought about how the technology is going to impact the classroom, particularly in the future. When he talked about losing jobs, I immediately thought of our profession on the teaching side and costing the environment by Andy. I enjoyed that a lot. In terms of the future, I'll get back to something I think you've talked about before, and that is I teach at Cornell with the college, and there's three schools within the college. There's a graduate school, hotel school, and an agricultural school. We're all in the college. And we don't have a lot of demand for management accounting type courses. And so, of course, you know, we have to ensure that we get high ability students, and it doesn't seem like we're attracting the highest ability students, at least from our Cornell students. And the other tough thing, I think, is on the research side, because we're so spread out, we're lucky to have journals like Management Accounting Research, because in the U.S. we have one journal, but we don't have enough, and so people do organizational work, find themselves, you know, Strategic Management Journal, Management Science, it really gets spread thin. So, and I think we have to work on that. In terms of research topics in terms, start with performance measurement and Jan's paper. I can't help but think about study that we did with a hotel company that was well received study, and they provided bonus plans on non-financial measures, but it was tied to a profit target. And we kept thinking to ourselves at the time, why do they, if the managers know that by maximizing customer satisfaction and reducing complaints, that will drive financial performance, why do we need to incentivize them on that? So it's kind of like his paper comes along, and, you know, it's kind of in the same view. You could have a lot of measures, but you don't need to necessarily reward on those measures, and let the workforce managers use those as tools in the way that they see fit. So I found that to be particularly interesting. Another area of research that wasn't talked about too much today, but I think is an exciting area for us, is cost management and cost behavior. I think in the last 10 years, there's been a lot of exciting studies that are getting into the journals on the asymmetric costs or sticky costs and the relationship between labor force and cost and risk and cost and things of that. So I think we're expanding from the simple cost model, and I think that's great for the profession. And the other thing, as a teacher, that I think about a lot, and it was mentioned in the study by Andy about environmental costs, is when I teach managerial accounting and costing objects, there's still too much product costing. We need to kind of expand into all costing other objects, such as customers and allocation of costing departments and allocation of those. I think we still have to move forward on the model, especially with technology, and you know, products are minor in advanced economies. And those are some thoughts that I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Listening to the presentations this morning and this afternoon, which I thoroughly enjoyed, it occurred to me that the problems that management accounting seeks to solve have not changed in the last 20 or even 30 or 40 years, and have arguably got worse. That's how to deal with complexity, how to measure and manage performance, and how to motivate and reward individuals. So I think the future issue for the future of management accounting is not that the problems will go away, but that we risk, perhaps as management accountants, researchers and practitioners, we risk losing ownership of the solutions. So why might that happen? I think I've got two suggestions as to why we might lose ownership of the solutions. The first one is that today's discussion has been mostly on the supply side. We've heard about the use of tools. A lot of these tools have been around for a very long time, and new technology. And we've heard far less about the demand side. Management accountants support not some anonymous business, but chief executive officers and boards, ultimately, who are responsible for delivering an organization's strategic objectives and performance. And what they do needs to be joined up very much with what boards really are concerned about, which is risk management and corporate governance. And if we don't join up all the pieces that support chief executive officers and boards, then other groups will fill that gap for us. And indeed, to some extent, they already are in that space. My second concern about why we might lose ownership of management accounting is that there was one aspect of the supply side that wasn't covered this morning and doesn't tend to get talked about very often, and that's the future workforce. There are major shifts in demographic generations, and the group called the millennials are just now at middle management level, and the first cohort of Generation Z has just reached university. My nephew is one of those. And what do we know about those cohorts? As academics, we see students go through every year at university, and we don't really spot the changes, but over the course of 10, 15, 20 years, there are enormous shifts in what those groups expect and how they interact with each other and with the generations before them. So Generation Z, the one is just about to come into the workforce, and they are going to be the management accountants of the future if they're interested in management accounting. What do we know about Generation Z? We know that they are very risk averse, they're extremely compliant, they are entrepreneurial, they're very technologically savvy. They're the first generation to have grown up with a complete world of technology around them. And interestingly, in linking to Jan's presentation this morning, they really, really want meaningful work. So if management accounting doesn't offer meaningful work for this generation, we're going to be struggling to find management accountants. So they may well have a different view of management accounting from the view that we currently have. So does management accounting have a future? I think it does, but I think it requires management accountants to remain the stewards so that the board has one place to go to for its expertise. And to do that, I would suggest a couple of things. One is that management accountants need to embrace the use of qualitative data much, much more than we currently do. And I say that as a qualitative researcher. For example, everyone here, I'm sure, when you go to buy something online, you look at the comments that people have written before. You don't just take the scores. So we all really know the value of looking at those comments and evaluating the credibility of someone's information before we look at the scores. And the organisations that I work with, and the NHS is one of those, have a very, very high demand for qualitative information to support board-level decision-making. For example, what sort of actions are being taken to mitigate risk and how credible are those actions? It's not something that management accountants can necessarily put into very easily put into their reports, but it's something that they need to take on. The second thing I think is we need to learn to transfer learning much more from the public to the private sector. I've come from the private sector, but now I'm working with the public sector. And although the perceived wisdom often is that the private sector knows what it's doing and the public sector doesn't, public sector, the complexity is incredible when they're dealing with money, quality, safety, all at once, and not-for-profit. It's amazing. I think a lot of learning could go the other way. And the final point is, and this might be controversial, I don't know if Anthony's still here, I think we should actively fight to demonstrate that management accountants, and by that I mean practitioners with help from the academic community, have the expertise and the knowledge to support chief executive officers and boards. Most accountants that I know tend to be very polite, nice people, and I would really like to see them fighting off the rapacious management consultants that come in. And those of you who know about the NHS will know exactly what I'm on about this. And they can either do that on their own by arguing that they have the skill sets or bringing in not-for-profit organisations who are quite able to help organisations deliver management accounting. My final point is I was quite taken with David's story about the Long Island Iced Tea and how when they rebranded their name it led to a quadrupling of the share price, and I am wondering whether it's time for a rebranding of management accounting and management accountants so that we can equally increase our value to organisations. Thank you.
Didn't they do well? Given I didn't tell them what to do. It seems to me there are shadows of a very large number of things today. Some of them are around the corner, some are here now. And I think in some sense, you did wonder whether the people being positive or negative, in the sense of, for example, big data. You know, on the one hand, it's good this way, that way it's bad, you know, and so on. There are a number of other things that come along of that sort. Two things that seem to me that perhaps didn't run through the presentations as much as they might have done. One is that accountants, management accountants, are not on their own in organisations. But if you look at the presentations, I'm sure it's my mistake, but they didn't really mention most of the other bits of the organisation. I mean, if you talk about strategy, for example, you know, one of the usual things is management accounting must become more strategic. Yeah, sure. But the only problem with that is that management accountants don't own strategy. And the people who do own strategy are going to keep it, and so on. That's a worry that runs through this. The other thing I think that also was missing was any rivals. There were no rivals in any of this today. You know, we talk about these firm, this firm, we do this, 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 and this, and it gets better. Out there, there's somebody else trying to do the same thing, and they're getting better and better and better, you know. And that's those two challenges seem to me to be very important. And the rivals these days aren't next door, as they used to be. That's right across the world, or whatever. If you ask senior management, how much do you know about your rivals? They either sort of say, I know everything, which is clearly not true, or I know nothing, and we don't need to know about them. And I think that's wrong. I think, and I've said this many times, I believe very strongly, for example, that one of your budget comparisons ought to be your rivals. That is, when you write your budget, you write it relative to your rivals. And people will say, well, I don't know how, we can't do that. I mean, are you asking us to spy? The answer is yes. People do spy. You know, there's no doubt about it. And every now and again they get caught. There's big public publicity in the papers and so on. But that I think is something that needs to be thought. And in some sense, even hospitals, they have rivals. You know, it may have been very good in some ways to commercialise much more hospitals. It may be very bad, but one of the things it does do is produce rivals. And that I think is something that needs to be considered. So two things really, I think. One is accountants do need to be more strategic. Two, I do believe it would be wise to consider much more the competition. And the competition is out there. You know, we talk about the market and so on, we talk about consumers, but the other lot in the market are the competitors. And we ought to talk about them much more. The other thing I'm a bit worried about, I like the idea of value, but I find it much more slippery than most people seem to. I mean, I'm sure I'm misunderstanding, but really, this afternoon, you were saying that, you've really got to try and line up the definition of cost and the definition of value. Well, I don't know how to do that. I don't even know what the definition of value is. I think it varies, you know. I mean, some people have cheap old plastic panes with some charity's name on them. Other people have very, very expensive pens. You know, they have different values. Economists, a long while ago, well before modern economics, as it were, tried to have demand curves which showed the utility that people got from things. One of the major breakthroughs in economics was to stop doing that and rely on market prices to tell us what people wanted. Because market prices are a minimum. You know, if somebody pays for something, that's the minimum value. Otherwise, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to work out value. Even in target costing, the Japanese they asked consumers what sort of things did they like in whatever product it was, and if it turned out to be too expensive to make it, you didn't make it. They stopped. But more and more, as I understand it, target costing now is about costs and targets. It's not about value. With original target costing in Japan, it was about value. You compare the value of the thing to the consumer, the cost to make it. What I'm saying really is I find value very slippery, and I think a lot of other people do as well. There are a few things that might come along and face us in the future. Okay, now, you've heard our misguided views of the future. Would you now like to give some of yours? Over there. Have we got any? Wait, the man is asleep over there. Can you, the microphone? Sorry, I crept up on you without you knowing. Oh, there's one there as well. Sorry.
Thank you. Richard Thomas, Aston Business School. Excuse me. I was very interested in the views of Julia, CEOs, boards, quantitative versus qualitative. And I might, if I may, ask a question rather than give my view of the future.
Sure.
I wondered whether there's an opportunity in preparing for the future to try and adopt a sort of dual approach in an organisation which might have a mix of calculative cultures, which would be at the board level accepting perhaps more the qualitative discussion and view of the future at that board level, but underpinned perhaps in other parts of the organisation where they do really need to crunch the numbers and understand what it is, whether it's a financial performance or whatever indicator you're measuring. Would you see, in preparing for the future, being able to grow a management accounting cadre that could either specialise in that qualitative facilitation of board levels and perhaps even letting the new technology, the AI, coming in to do the number crunching? Would you see perhaps a way of evolving that way, or is that too much of a mix of cultures in one organisation?
I think the best people are already doing this, actually. The finance team I work with in one particular NHS trust, they've got some really good people who are already asking the questions, or actually starting to say, the numbers aren't telling us the story. We need to have some narrative, and it's not just the old narrative. I think Julia was saying this morning, Costa, or I can't remember, somebody was saying, oh, it's Rick actually 10% up, and why? You know, it's actually telling a narrative about what's going on in the organisation and leading the board to ask the right questions. And I think that's it's a difficult skill, and it's not a skill that comes with sitting looking at numbers all day. And I think it has to be throughout the whole organisation, because the problem is if numbers are crunched, as you say, without that sort of underlying understanding of the objectives of the organisation, as they're going down, then people don't understand what they're trying to produce going up. So you have to understand things like the organisation's risk appetite to know whether you're going to go with this number or that number. And as management accountants, we make judgments all the time on what those numbers should be. And to do that, you really do have to understand the where the organisation is going and what it's trying to achieve. I don't know if anyone else has anything to add on that.
Thank you.
There and then there.
Thank you. Oh, hello, my name is Claire McGovern. I'm a visiting lecturer at the University of Law Business School. I'd like to say I agree with your point about rebranding of management accountants. I can't remember where the information comes from, but nearly anybody I've ever met growing up always referred to accountants as boring. And you're absolutely right. It's going to be very hard to persuade young people to go into an industry if that's the de facto response, that we're all very boring. Clearly we're not, but you know, there's some persuading to be done there. And the other point I wanted to make was I predominantly have worked in SMEs, and one of my concerns for the future is, as we get more automated and we're bringing in IT, is that an awful lot of the issues going with information gathering and basically doing your accounts is that if there's a problem, it'll fall to an IT person to resolve, as opposed to an accountant who knows what it's all about. So I know it goes back to rubbish in, rubbish out, but if you don't know if you're looking at rubbish because an IT person helps you fix your particular problem, I think that's potentially a large problem going forward.
Who were we? Down there.
Hi. I thought, Julia, you hit a number of the issues head on and would agree with most of them, and equally Michael on some of your points. I think ultimately it comes down to attracting the best people into the profession, and whether that's via university or direct into the profession, that is key. And it's going to vary from country to country. Our institutional mechanisms for attracting people in the UK are very different to those in the USA. And in growing economies such as China and Africa, where Generation Z may be very different, because I suspect all the research on Generation Z is US and UK, and I have some doubts about the quality of that. I think the best management accountants or chartered accountants have always moved up, maybe through management accounting into strategy. So, you know, Simon Hendry, who's a SEMA member, he owns strategy at Shell. One of our members owns strategy at Unilever. So that whether that is a stepping stone to getting up there. The demand side is fundamental. Our business partnering report, plug, has precisely that matrix. It's supply and demand. So we can supply the best, we can be good at technology, the best people, we can get involved in all of these things, but we've got to create the demand from the chief executives who and the businesses or the trusts or whatever we're there to serve. That's why we're there. I think, you know, there's always been this risk of accountants being boring. I grew up with Monty Python. That didn't do us any favours in the UK. I suspect we've got to overcome those issues. Rebranding, I think, is important. I know that some of the USN universities are already talking about accounting and analytics courses because it sounds sexier. The syllabus hasn't seemed to have changed very much, but it attracts more people.
Back.
Bob Berry, recently ex-Nottingham University Business School. Julia, is the issue management consultants and management accountants, or is it management accountants within an organisation versus management accountants coming in from outside the organisation? Is it simply the way the profession may be organised in the future? There used to be operational research groups in organisations. These days, there typically aren't. Those techniques have been taken over by other groups. The core skill is now dispersed. And what you see are professional organisations who will offer a variety of skills. They can produce the team of different skills that the in-house management accounting team can't.
Is that a question or an observation? you may be right, but there is also the question of fit. And what I have experienced, what I see within the NHS, is there's not a lot of that fit going on. So consultants are imposed on organisations for legitimacy reasons very often, and there's no consideration as to whether the skills that those consultants have are what the organisation needs. But for the purposes of telling the Department of Health this organisation is being seen by EY, PwC, whatever, it's ticking the right box. So I take your point that a lot of those skills have been stripped out, there's no question, but going to the big four and just imposing them back in these organisations is not always the answer.
Over there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No.
So Anthony Pember, Grant Thornton. I just wanted to reiterate your point. My thought about management accounting is it needs to pivot away from being seen as accountants. Some of the best management accountants I've ever met aren't actually accountants. And they think the thinking that often a traditional financial accountant brings to management accounting, I think, is hindering the occupation, the entire industry. I would also add that it's management accounting has to expand beyond into more of that operational research type of role, rather than them focusing on a finance function and seeing itself as a finance function, to be more cross-functional across all of the areas of an organisation. And if I think about certainly US higher education as an example, most, and I don't know if you have the same here in the UK, most institutions will have an organisation called institutional research. And the institutional research organization is essentially tasked with anything and everything when a question gets asked about the institution, from student success through to all sorts of financial and non-financial questions. And to me, that's where I see management accounting going in the future, so it can answer all of the questions that the CEO, the board, and other key stakeholders are trying to ask.
Simon Preece, Preece and Company, Chartered Certified Accountant, Sole Practitioner. I do a lot of CPD and I've worked for a number of different organisations in my career. I note that when it comes to our studies, albeit CIMA or ACCA, we do quantitative analysis, operation research, decision-making techniques, whatever you like to call it. But I have found that even with our CPD within both CIMA, ACCA, etc., we don't touch upon quantitative analysis, decision-making techniques, or operation research methods at all. It's something we do for the exam. We pass it, we park it, and we never actually see it being applied. And really, that sort of those techniques we could apply to strategic planning, and we just don't. From a management accountant's perspective, I would have thought that perhaps we could use more proactively strategic planning techniques and those quantitative operational research techniques together in order to help business grow. But there again, the other hand is that management accountants must be given autonomy to be able to use these systems and functions in order to help businesses. Thank you.
Junior's had most of the discussion. I'm wondering whether either of you two have been sort of provoked a bit into anything.
No, I'm fine. But the comment. The comment. About attraction in the U.S., I do worry a little bit from a U.S. perspective that some management accountants see that if they publish more financial accounting related work, they can get in more journals. And I do worry about that, even, you know, as we might not be getting the best students, I worry that sometimes some of the management accountants are drifting away. I don't know what to do about that, but besides other outlets, respectable outlets to publish.
I think two ways. One, the rebranding issue, I think, is something we've been discussing for a long time, and calling something accounting or calling management accountants finance professionals. I think industry has already got a lot of different titles for people who do what we understand to be management accounting. So I think actually we don't necessarily, when I say we don't need to rebrand, perhaps the Management Control Association or MARC may need to rebrand at some stage to reflect the actual titles that people have in organisations. It's one thing. The other thing, I suppose, that provoked a response was that Julia talked about consultants, and one of the other groups of people, if you like, that threaten or contribute to our space, whichever way you look at it, are the software people, software companies who bring out apps and then market them. There's one that I went to a demonstration recently at one of the professional bodies, and there was a piece of software that I thought, oh, this should be exciting. I'm going to turn out and go and listen to this. It was claiming to link strategy with management information in a particularly new and exciting way. And I went there and I thought, well, I might see something that looks akin to a balanced scorecard. But what did I see on the first slide? A balance sheet. It was actually a financial accounting system, and they were marketing it as something that it wasn't. And basically, I was a little disappointed with the presentation, and I gave them some relevant feedback. But I suppose the products that are marketed, it is difficult to tell, I think, from the outside what is it that actually is doing what it says on the tin? Which are the best systems to go for different sizes of business? It may be obvious for larger businesses, not so obvious for small to medium-sized enterprises. And I think there's possibly a space for the professional bodies to maybe I don't know whether they would rate them or assess them in some way, but at least contribute some sort of review as to which ones are actually worth engaging with.
I can never understand people who try to explain things to me. That's my problem. Where are we?
Yeah, sir. I had a question for Julia.
You are popular.
No, I was just controversial, I think.
It's actually the question of risk. I know from some of my former MBA students in Germany who are now accountants that in Germany, the audit report must contain an assessment of risk, which is audited. My question is, to what extent is this prepared by management accountants, or have we already lost that part of the market to the auditor?
That's a very good question. Well, I can't possibly speak for every single organization, but I think in the bigger organizations, certainly the chief financial officer has a very good take on that with management accounting team. Sometimes there's a risk officer and they're working closely with them. That's an input. But I think you're right. I think the internal auditors and the external auditors are actually used more to make sure it's articulated in an appropriate way in big firms. But in small firms, I agree. I think probably a lot of that is outsourced.
Thank you. Where are we?
This is just an observation. We have got a member called King County, which is the sixth largest county with $6 billion in USA. And they've got the accounting department, managerial accounting department, sitting right next door to the risk management department. And accountants are actually encouraged to take a risk, but not to reach the inflection point where the risk becomes crisis. But the accountants have a roadmap on how am I going to take a risk to an extent that it doesn't become a crisis, and if it does become a crisis, how do I handle that? The other thing they've done, and even the accounting department have done, is outside every office, there were a process roadmap of what those departments are doing. And people are going around with post-it notes on putting something there where there is a process pollution so somebody can go and fix it. So it's a classic example. The person who is head of King County came from Boeing. He was a senior director at Boeing. And he instilled the whole Boeing culture where everyone works together and accountants are actually rewarded for taking risk and doing something out of the box.
Is there anybody else who would like to say a few words? You've almost got the ability now to say the final words. So if anybody really wants to sum up the future of management accounting, now is your opportunity. All right. If you don't, I should say to you that when you ever have panels about the future of accounting generally, not just management accounting, they are miserable. They always are. You know, if you talk about, you know, financial accounting, they're miserable because all their studies to the critics really don't help at all, you know, and so on. That's the sort of view. And so whenever you have a panel, you always get this problem with slight miseries, you know, to be careful. You know. On the other hand, I mean, it's fair to say, isn't it, that management accounting does do quite a lot and no one else does. And we tend to forget that. And, for example, much of performance measurement and so on, much of comparisons across organisations or across countries and all sorts of things. You know, the management accountant and accountant does still hold an awful lot of information that no one else really does have. And we tend to forget that when we're being miserable. But, you know, there's a lot of things that accountants do and nobody else does. And I think, actually, the areas we should think about very much are control and performance measurement of one sort or another. I'm a bit worried about performance measurement because this morning I was told one measure is more than ample. I must admit, I did wonder about zero measures. And I was also then told that in other areas you have many, 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 many measures. So I was a bit confused, but it seemed to me an ideal area for us to be expert in. So, thank you for that. Can I thank you three? Thank you very much.